In this hour, I'm really excited. I love to talk about what we're going to talk about right here. Because I love helping people one-on-one. But I tell you what I get equally excited about is the thought, because I've seen it happen, that a church, whether it's 30 people or 3,000 people, could actually get a hold of this kind of mentality as its DNA and become a church who doesn't just have one person on staff that does all the counseling. About every church in America has at least got enough sense now to know you better have somebody who can do some counseling, because people are messed up, people are broken, and when they trust Christ, yes, they're justified instantaneously. They're on their way to heaven. There's no fear of death, no longer condemnation. But does that eradicate all the history of what they've been through? And does that automatically mean that they are squared away? They got problems and they still need help. Whether you want to call it discipleship or intense discipleship, that's for me. Every church should be moving its people towards, how do I change and grow, become more like Christ? Counseling is simply intense discipleship when the boat's upside down and they're really stuck and swirling in an eddy and can't seem to get out, rather than moving forward in the general river of discipleship that I hope your church has. But it's amazing how many churches, they think just good expositional verse-by-verse preaching and general discipleship should take care of all of it. But you really need this other arm of, what about all these people that are really stuck? And I think the better way to go about it is not just, well, let's hire a woman or a man who's great at this, and then they're just loaded up all day, every day of the week, hour after hour, counseling people. That is exhausting. And for me, you've got people in your church who could be doing this. And then even informally, if you get the culture set in the church, everyone doesn't have to be filling out a PDI and turning it in and officially meeting with someone. If you get your church people thinking this way, they're just talking to people at the gym, talking to the next door neighbor, saying, hey, come on over and I'd love to have a salad with you and have lunch. Let's talk some more about your discouragement. Let's talk some more about your daughter. Oh, what would happen in the church of Jesus Christ if believers and church leaders started thinking in terms of, here's what I say in our church, and I've been saying it for 20 years now, because the counseling word freaks people out. Oh, I'm no counselor. Okay, let's set that aside. How about, wouldn't you like to know how to help a real person with a real problem using your Bible? As I say it all the time, I say, I want every believer, and just like evangelism, what if we got this tucked in just like we're supposed to think about evangelism? Does every believer have the gift of evangelism? No. It's one of the spiritual gifts. Bad answer. No. Is everybody called to evangelize? Yes. I don't think I have the gift of evangelism, folks. I mean, there's people in my church, they have the gift of evangelism. They just wake up, they eat it for breakfast. I mean, I want to share the gospel with someone, like right now at the gas station. I don't know him. I've never met him. Just boom. I don't. I want to throw up. But I do evangelism. I do evangelism. It's not my gift, but I pray and say, God, help me. And so I share the gospel for 2 hours from Cincinnati to Minneapolis with the guy sitting next to me. So I pray before I get on a plane. God, I want to read my book, honestly. I was like, oh, just read the book. Maybe they don't want to talk. But then I screw up my courage and I start a conversation because I've prayed that God would put me, and this guy's wife had just died in the last year. I asked questions, and then had an opportunity to clearly share the gospel. I do evangelism. I don't have the gift. There'll be people in your church that are better than others. It's like, oh man, they are good at coming alongside and helping real people with real problems using their Bible. But what if every believer at least thought, like I think we're supposed to think about evangelism, I should have some clue about how to do this. I should have some idea about how to give someone hope. I should have some idea about how to build some involvement. I should have some idea about how to ask good questions and don't just make statements. And I should know my Bible well enough, or at least say, you know, I'll check on that. Oh, the good stuff that could begin to happen. So in this workshop, I want to talk to you about, and I hope this will encourage you. It doesn't matter the size of your church. I started doing this when I went to Northern Kentucky, January 1st, 1996, to 80 people meeting in Turkey Foot Middle School. Doesn't that sound like Kentucky? Yes, we were all barefooted and we carried rifles. And there I had my 80 people. And as I dismissed the kids to their class to preach my sermon I'd worked so hard on, I was preaching to 35 adults. But I already had this in mind, that I wanted our church not to just get good preaching, not to just eventually have a decent children's ministry, even if there was no Jeep, not to eventually have some other things going on, but I thought, I want everybody, not just me, to think, oh, I'm supposed to know how to help a real person with a real problem using my Bible. So I started talking that way immediately. So this is what I want to share with you. What did I do? What were the things on purpose, intentionally, I had in mind? So don't hear me saying this is the only way to do it. This is one beggar sharing with other beggars where I found bread on how to make this happen. You know, there may be things you say, nah. But if you get a couple of things that you could say, I ought to start doing that, I will be encouraged. So here's the things I did. And now we're 1,600, 1,700, 1,800 people. And I'm still talking this way and working this way. But we've grown all along. Now don't hear me saying, if you do these things, you will become a big church. That has nothing to do with it. God decides the size of your church. And I'm convinced we're not big because I'm great or because we did this model of what I'm showing you. It's the sovereignty of God. There are better pastors than me, much better pastors than me, in small churches. The goal is faithfulness, faithfulness. And I always said, I don't have it. Even when we finally scrounged up enough money to build our first building, we bought a farm, 12 acres, we saved our money forever. The builder just kept pressing me. So what's your attendance goal? What's your attendance goal? What's your attendance goal? And I just kept saying, I don't have an attendance goal. I have growth goals. I want to grow whoever God brings. I want them to become Christ-like. I want them to be equipped. And then he'd say, so what's your attendance goal? It's like, I don't think you hear me. I don't have an attendance goal. It's just very hard for people to not think in terms. I don't set numbers goals every year. But I would get very concerned if people weren't getting saved, if I wasn't hearing stories of breakthroughs in counseling, if I didn't hear good stories of life that's going on in our small groups. Here, this should encourage you. We haven't grown in 5 years, and we've lost 200 people over the last 5 years. There's how good I am. Does that make you feel better? I'm doing the same thing I was doing. We were growing 20% a year, just couldn't even keep up with it. But God is God. And we've leveled off, and I still go to church happy every day and excited to say, Lord, I'm going to serve and equip and shepherd whoever you have. And if you think this isn't, because get this, those of you that are pastors, Hebrews 13 says we're going to give an account for their souls. 1,700 is plenty for me to give an account for. If he thinks that I've hit my ceiling, yay, God. So whatever it is, be faithful. And shepherd, and try some of this and see if it might make a difference and you won't feel so all alone, like I'm the only one doing this kind of stuff. All right, ready? Here are the things that I had in mind that I tried to do. Number one, don't get excited all by yourself. Don't get excited all by yourself. When I left the church in South Carolina that had about 600 people and I was the associate pastor on staff and I've been there 10 years, I realized something. I keep going to conferences, and I come back all excited with my little notebook and all the blanks filled in, and I bought a couple other books, and I start trying to talk to other people, and it's like deer in the headlights, like, whatever, yeah, blah, 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 blah. And then I set it down, and I try to answer all the phone calls I missed while I was gone, a meeting, and just nothing, no traction. And I always had a goal. I'm going to go back through this. Yeah, right. Never went back through it. And so I was like, I'm going to stop going to conferences by myself. I have got to have normal people go with me. By that, I mean someone who's not the pastor. We are not normal. That's the category that everyone puts us in, right? Because they're like, it's Brad. He's excited. We pay him to be excited. He's supposed to be excited. He thinks everything is great. Yay, Brad. Stay excited. I've got a job. I've got kids. I've got soccer. The water heater just broke. And so when I went to Northern Kentucky to Turkey Foot Middle School, I was like, I'm just not going to go to a conference if I can't get at least one person to go with me. So that's what I mean by that. Is that hard? Oh, yeah, that's hard. Because they work jobs. When I go to a conference, I get conference time, and the church doesn't say that was 2 days vacation. For them, it's vacation. So this is a big deal. But I just prayed and I begged and I pleaded. And so the very first year that I was there, I drove an hour north of where I was to Dayton, Ohio, to Clear Creek Chapel. And I got one guy in my church that worked at the airport, air traffic controller, who had Monday off. And this was Monday training. It was 11 Mondays. All the conference teaching was, and then you watched counseling in the evening. And this one guy rode in his pickup truck with me for 11 Mondays. And now, Brad and Mr. Pickup Truck is excited. We got two people excited now. And then I heard of this place, Lafayette, Indiana, 3 hours north of me, that was doing this week-long training. And I begged, and I pleaded, and I prayed, and I prayed, and I prayed. And I got three people to take a week's vacation. They have to pay for a hotel. One was a printer repairman. One was a single mom. And one was, I forget the other one. And they went with me. Woo! We came back. They were so excited. They talked about it so much. They said, this is some of the best stuff I've ever heard, ever been through, ever. And so the next year, I was able to get 8 people. And then I got 15. And we were off to the races. Don't get excited all by yourself. Don't keep what you're doing a secret. Don't keep what you're doing a secret. Too often, ministry has this sense of regular people can hand out bulletins. There's things that they can do. But this kind of stuff we're trafficking in this conference, that's for the experts. Only they can do that. Now, you can harp all day long to your people that you can do this. You can do this, really. But they need to see it. And so get people to sit in with you, to observe what you're doing. Again, everything I'm telling you is hard to get people to do. So just, but here, for the sake of time, I'm not going to keep repeating myself. Every single thing I say, just add in there, and he prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed. And then he said this, and he prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed. And I kid you not, remember what I told you? I was praying an hour at least every morning. I was taking 6 days a year for a whole day of prayer and fasting. And I would pray and say, God, get some people to go with me. God, give me a few small group leaders. God, bring a drummer. God, bring a keyboard player. I kid you not. I have one prayer journal that has become 4 black notebooks that I have a history of God's faithfulness. I prayed drummers into the church. Then you want to pray some out. But I don't keep a record of that. I prayed drummers into the church, keyboard players. Oh, man, and it's so exciting to me now when I'm praying new things and I see these yellowed pages of the old stuff with a red check mark. It's like, you know, I'm of the opinion, you know, it's fine. I can leave with my guitar. But it's like, oh, man, if we had a keyboard player that, you know, some sweet stuff is happening. It's a little more, I don't know. And I'm praying. And this guy comes to my small group at my house, new to our church. I mean, we're in that stage of, oh, new person. Visitor. He came to a small group, and he's a pilot, and just moved there from Virginia. So after small group was over, of course, I, like white on rice, engaged him. Hello, so glad you came. Trying to be calm, but, oh. And he's young, and so I said, hey, you want to see the church office? Because that's downstairs in the bedroom. And I walk downstairs, and we go into the bedroom, and I've got all these bookshelves jammed in there. And as we step in, he turns to the shelf, and he's like, I have that book. It's this big, fat music theory book that I have, because I was a worship leader for 10 years. I said, you do? Why? And he said, oh, I'm actually a music major from Messiah College, but I'm a pilot now. I said, what do you play? He said, keyboard. I said, you are an answer to prayer. I didn't ask him if he wanted to be. I said, you are. So you pray and you're pushy. No. But here's what's cool. You know what he said back? He's standing there. He's like, wow. My parents said, if you end up going to a church that needs a keyboard player, we'll buy the first keyboard. It gets better. He's now our full-time worship leader. So, but I mean, I've prayed. So just wrap that around everything I'm saying. Don't take this as a formula and say, oh, if you just try to get 3 people to go with you. Oh, if you just, yeah, do some of these things and pray. Pray. Like your life depends on it, because it does. You'd be shocked what you might see if you prayed more, if we prayed more. So don't keep what you're doing a secret. By this I mean, I started trying to get people to sit in with me and watch what I was doing. Two hurdles you got to get over. The person you're helping doesn't want anybody else there. The people you're trying to get to come there are wondering, why am I here? Why would I do that? And I started with my leaders. So I wanted deacons, or if you have elders, or whatever your leaders are. Again, and some churches, and this is probably true of every church, you've got influencers that don't hold a title, but these are key influencers. Get those kind of people to see what you're doing. It's hard. They work jobs. So I'm trying to ask this deacon to also now, not just come on Sunday morning, but to show up on Tuesday night at my house and sit in my den and watch me work with this couple. But you can get some. As you pray and pray and pray and pray and ask. And I just began to get people to sit in and watch what I was doing so that it won't just be. And then do this. Kind of tied to that, I decided I am not going to be that all-star go-to, just send them to Brad. That can stroke your ego a little bit, but long-term, it's not what you want. And so I decided every single time the phone rings and somebody says, oh, my hairdresser is going through a terrible time and her husband's committed adultery and he's running off with a girl in the band and he's the drummer and I'm not making this up, would you meet with her? And I'm like, I'll meet with her if you will come with her and meet with me. And this lady in my church said, yes. And so she watches week after. And this lady is one of those, you know, you got them in your church. They just find broken people. I want these people who are so good at finding them to learn how to fix them. You know what I mean? It's like, it's great that you're such a finder. Let's work on being a fixer also, because you're finding more than I can keep up with, right? So wouldn't it be cool if you connect super well with hurting people and then also could be the same person that says, and I'd love to have you over for a cookout. Let's talk. Let's take it to that next level. The best way to do that is for them to see what you're doing, because it's not rocket science. And I was so encouraged after maybe 4 or 5 years there. This is what started to happen. Someone would grab me at church on Sunday or out in the parking lot and say, I started to call you this week because blah, 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 blah. And then I remembered what you always say. So I'd say it from the pulpit. I'd just say it. Not in a ugly way. Like, don't bring me people. I don't like people. I'm here to preach a sermon. I'm not trying to help people. No. But I just constantly talked about, oh man, you can do this. I want you to know how to help. And you say it often enough that then people started to say, but I didn't. And so I thought, okay, what? How would I do that? But they started shooting me emails and saying, okay, I know I'm not supposed to get you to take this over, but what would I do next? What would you suggest I do? What do you know? How do you? And so I started saying, I'll give you all the time you want, an hour or two on the phone. I'll meet with you to get you ready to meet with them. Oh my goodness, that's such a win. That's such a move in a new direction. Even once it was still me, the church grew to like 650 with just still me. And so all the small group leaders, I'm shepherding them, but I told them all the time, you call me and you have an issue and a problem, I'll give you all the time in the world to talk to you about how to help them. That's huge. You're becoming an equipper. So don't keep what you're doing a secret. But this is hard, you know, to get people. Even today we face it, you know. People don't want there to be an observer, but they get over it. So right now with this horrible counseling thing I've got somebody observing this. This is great. This guy's already got his, I don't know what, master's in biblical whatever from CCF. But he really hasn't done that much counseling. This is good for him to see how horrible this is going with Brad Bigney. And then there have been several sessions that went two and a half, 3 hours. Don't tell Jay Adams or Randy Patton. It just is what it is. Just like Mount Carmel, Prophet of Baal showdowns. That's good to see. There's just been several sessions like, oh, that was good to see. Help people, allow people to see what it is that you're trying to do, because you want to make disciples. You want to multiply yourself. 1 Timothy 2 says, you therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that's in Christ Jesus. Things that you've heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men and women who'll be able to teach others also. So that leads into my third one that I learned I had to do. Give some others a loving shove. Here's what I learned in a hurry, you guys. even as I started trying to take people up to Lafayette with me, and I'd go 13, 18, 23, you know, getting bigger crowds. If you're not careful, America especially has a mindset of just Bible conferences. It's great stuff. And they still go home. Hey, you going to counsel somebody? Are you kidding me? No way. I'm not going to actually counsel someone. Like, that's what we're actually looking for. And so I had to actually, I started keeping a list of who had ever been to a conference like this. You'd be on my list. And then as things came up, I intentionally would start calling and saying, I got a new case that I'm starting. I know you went to the training in Lafayette. I know you were in Montana in July 2015. Would you be willing to come and sit in on this? We're meeting on Tuesday nights at 7, and I just call till I got somebody. I don't want to just meet with them. I want someone who's already been through the notebook like you have to take, because I admit, if you just sat here with these notebooks, you'd still just kind of say, still like, okay, what? What? I mean, what kind of homework do you give? How long do you listen? It's nothing like seeing it. We all want to see it. And I'm not talking about people just popping in and out. So I got Billy and his wife Sue that saw the first two sessions, and then they're busy and someone else comes in. No. That's not helpful to your counselee nor them. I'm looking for a commitment. I'm starting a new case. Would you come sit in from start to finish? And they see the first session, how I try to be gentle and kind and listen well and go through the PDI and ask questions, and then we hit a snag, and then it always happens. They ask me a lot of questions like, "What? How?" And then I give them all my stuff, everything I have. I give it to them. So every time I do homework, I give it to him, to her, and to him, or to him and her. Sometimes I have a couple. You are making a disciple. You're equipping somebody else, and they're getting it. I can't tell you how many times I have people. I have a dentist. He actually teaches in Cincinnati, teaches dental stuff. They sat through. They'd been in this. They're in my church, and they sat through. And at the end, they said, oh my goodness, we are so excited. This is what we want to do. As hard as it is, listen, folks, there are Christians who get excited because when you see this, you realize, I can make a difference. I can make a difference. I want to do this. I got a couple that he works at Toyota. He has to drive an hour south of where we live to Georgetown, Kentucky. He's driving an hour there, hour back. They lead a small group. Plus, they sat in and watched it. So they were observing this horrible situation that I had with the guy. They'd only been married 18 months. He was furious. He left. He's moving back to California. He moved 2 hours south of us to LaGrange, living with a friend, blah, 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 blah. It's a mess. And they watched me get nowhere in that situation, just week after week, just trying, just hard as can be. And him just saying, she's a screamer. I didn't know she was a screamer. Can't deal with screaming. Screams all the time. I'd look at her and say, did you scream while you were dating? No. I'm like, okay, this is not fair. But this is still not grounds for divorce. I can't find the screaming verse. He's like, my first wife was an alcoholic, screamed all the time. This is a gentle guy. He's an artist. It's just like, can't deal with the screaming. And then there was more. There were things that she was doing. I was trying to work this through. Then I snapped my ACL at youth camp, being a good senior pastor, playing hard with the kids. Jumped for a frisbee during ultimate frisbee. Bam! And I'm out of commission. I have to have surgery. I'm in rehab. I'm on drugs. I'm out of it. And so I say to this couple, hey, would you just take it? And inside I'm thinking, woo, you go. Yes, hallelujah. I'll just take another pill and I'll lie here. Be warm, be filled. May that go well. So after about 6 weeks, and I realize, you know, it pops into my head the things that I should start doing again, like, I should probably call them and take that back. But I, you know, in all honesty, I could, so I should. And so I call and Tom and Claire. I'm like, hey, you guys, I think I'm at the point where I could. And they're like, that's going great. In fact, and they live near the church. So they say, it's going great. In fact, why don't you come over to the house and observe? And these are not arrogant people. These are precious people. They're still in the church. Oh, man. You'd like to have 300 Hawtreys. And when I finished my counseling at 7, they were meeting at 8, and I just buzzed over to their living room. I'm sitting in the observer chair. He's got his arm around his wife. He's in the middle of saying, it's never going to be all perfect. It doesn't have to be perfect. We live in a fallen, broken world. I'm like, what'd you do? What did you do? teach me, O wise one. And I'm telling you what, do you know what that does for that couple? Like, they got to see God break through and use them. And they've been counseling ever since as they lead a small group and serve in our church. He still works for Toyota. They're not on staff, but I got people like this, and they're excited. Is it hard? Oh, yeah. Is it time-consuming? Yes. But folks, there, not everybody, but there are people in your church that would be willing to step up to something that you think, this matters. My life counts. I'm being used. God is using me. I get to see God do some great things. So, but they're scared. The guy on staff that we have now was in the trucking industry, doesn't even have a college degree, comes out of a Lutheran church, hungry for more Bible, starts attending our church, didn't hardly know his Bible. I mean, grows, gets the training. He's a deacon, so I say, hey, come observe. I've got him sitting here with this horrible situation where she threw all his stuff out into the cul-de-sac with a coffee cup, and one of the neighbors that goes to our church said, hey, I think this couple is struggling a little bit. And so I let him come. To this day, Bob says he thought that they were supposed to watch me do this. And I'm pretty sure I said, I'm going to have you do this. And so I sorted it out some and kind of gave a general game plan and then said, so Bob and Arlene are going to meet with you. He still says that he was just like, what? But they did. And now he is our full-time counseling pastor. I'd say 70% of the people on staff in our church came right out of our church. That's exciting when you have an equipping mentality of, so you're going to have to give some people a loving shove sometimes. But I never shoved them and turned away and said, no, I gave you that. I don't have time to talk to you about that. I'm talking about a loving shove. You can do it, and I'm here for you. I'll give you all the time you need. Call me anytime. I'd rather have the person in my church who's trying to help someone calling me at 11 o'clock instead of the counselee falling apart. But I told them, you will not be bothering me. I will stop everything and help you know what to do next to help them. And sometimes even when it would get really gnarly, say, okay, this week I'll meet with you with them. And work with it. But you got someone else starting to do some of this. Loving shove. Start with something easy. So I thought, okay, I want people doing this kind of stuff. What is something that's not that scary that kind of gets them going? Premarital, right? Why should I be? Now see, it's a trade-off. You got to be willing to give away ministry and give up maybe some things you really like. Do I love it that I was doing the premarital counseling and I get to know them and then I do their wedding and it's very special because we spent 8 weeks together? Sure. And so that's gone. But it was worth it because I said, all right. So I took all the material that I was using to go through with couples before they got married and I just sent out a letter to couples in my church and I looked for older, seasoned, they've got a solid marriage. It doesn't have to be perfect. In fact, it'd be good if they'd had some struggles. Who I thought maybe could do this. And then I went through my 8 sessions with them. We didn't even have a building. I'm in this man's living room. And I went through my 8 sessions with them on Sunday afternoons and then said, now, who would be willing to do this? I want you to be a mentor couple. When I have someone who wants to get married, I'll pair you with them. You take them through the material, and then I'll do the wedding. Everybody didn't say yes, but I got about 8 couples who said yes. And now they're doing premarital counseling, which I have them go over conflict and sex and finances and roles, the role of the husband. It's counseling. And then here's what happened. You find out which ones are better at it than others. And so then I would make a phone call and try to seem real casual. Like, hey, would you? And I got some of them to shift over from premarital to marriage counseling. But they got their feet wet in. And that's still it today. I haven't changed that. So there's mentor couples working with the couples who are getting married, and then I'll meet with them one time before the wedding to say, hey, how do you want the wedding, and chat it up. And that's the reason I try to, even though I'm busy and big, I go to the rehearsal dinner. I don't just do, practice and head home. I go to the rehearsal dinner to meet family. But it's a trade-off. It's a trade-off, but it's worth it to me because I'm trying to give away ministry and equip people to do this. So start with something easy. You may think of something else in your church that's an easy way to introduce people to this. Bring it right into the pulpit. Everybody can't do this, but if you're here and you are the senior pastor or the preaching pastor, or you're a church where elders take turns teaching and preaching, look for opportunities to, I don't mean like turn Sunday morning into a workshop, but once this gets, you get excited about this, look for opportunities to begin to teach some of this. What is forgiveness? I won't bring this up to you. I won't dwell on it myself. I won't talk about it to others. I won't keep this from building. You just start dropping these little things into where it's appropriate, into your preaching and teaching, and watch how people are, 4 rules of communication. You just begin to show people how the Bible has real, practical, right down on the bottom shelf stuff that helps people. Because too often people have just thought there's the Bible and then there's real life. Begin to help bring those two things together. So where you can appropriately, I give you a great way to do this. As I started preaching and teaching, say, I did a marriage series, okay? I took some people who were in counseling who had breakthroughs give their testimony on a Sunday morning along with the marriage series. What I was wanting to do is help people to see, because here's what I think one of the greatest problems is in the church in America. It is so focused on information and too often not focused enough on transformation. We're supposed to be changing and growing, not just dishing up tons of information. And I don't want to step on toes, but it is one of the reasons why when I went from South Carolina to Northern Kentucky to plant a church, I said, we're not going to do this Sunday morning, Sunday school, church training at 4, Sunday night, Wednesday night. It's all great, but that mentality usually means the more the merrier. If this is God's word and it changes lives and it's powerful, whoa, teach Sunday morning and then teach Sunday night. And then teach 4 o'clock church training and then a Sunday school class. And then Wednesday night, at least do a devotional. Don't just pray. There's just got to be, it's too much information. People cannot even process it or begin to apply it to their lives. The goal is apply it to your life. You know, I'd be sitting there as the youth pastor with my head spinning. He's preaching the book of Hebrews on Sunday morning, and it's great. But Sunday night's the life of Christ. And in church training, we're going through Leviticus and how it applies to Hebrews. And then Wednesday night, it was a little short devotion on end times. It's like, oh my word, what am I supposed to do with all this? So I was like, I'm going to preach Sunday morning and I'm going to get people in small groups to one another and see how we're doing in real life, and less is more. Less is more. And say, what are we doing with this? About 40-50% of our small groups discuss the sermon. So even there, it's not another subject in small group. They take the sermon and press it and work it into their lives. So where you can, if it's appropriate and you're the one that gets to make that call, work some of this stuff into the. When I did my first Idols of the Heart sermon series, I had 3 testimonies. I had a woman give her testimony about how idolatry in her family growing up, what it looks like and what it does to relationships, and just shattered the family and caused so many problems. And then another Sunday, I had a young woman give a testimony of how her expectations of her husband, her young husband, were so high and it was idolatry. My marriage has to look, and he's a good man. She was killing their marriage with her own idolatry of how it had to look. And she's a very strong woman that's always like, well, why don't you, and you should, and let's do. And she gave a testimony. And then another guy gave a testimony who was lost and been invited by a guy in our church who worked at the same factory. And he tells the very week that he was sitting there, and this whole concept of idolatry just exploded in the beauty of Christ and the gospel. And he gave his testimony of getting saved. When people start hearing like, oh, this is supposed to change you, this impacts real life, it is powerful. Bring it right into the pulpit as you can. I started giving homework assignments just to create a sense that you're supposed to do something with this sermon. You know, at least give a few questions to think about or something to do. Push it, push it, push it. And I use testimonies. So this is the artist, the sensitive artist with the screaming wife. And still in our church, sit right in the front row, 3rd service, leading a small group. Just wow. And I'll never forget, we had to chase him down. I drove 2 hours south of where I live with an elder in the car and his small group leader to confront him, get to the front door where I'd heard he was living, and the man he's living with opens the door and says, you should have called. He's in Cincinnati today. I'm like, oh my word. Like who? Yeah, I'm going to call. We're coming to discipline you. Will you be there? Like, I said, there's a reason we didn't call. This is a surprise attack right here. Okay. So we ate lunch in a restaurant and drove home. But when he repented, it was such a joy for me all those weeks. It's just his wife by herself. And then to have him back. And the first Sunday he was back sitting there, when I finished preaching, he came up to me and he gave me a hug. And he said, "Thank you for being the kind of pastor that would not give up." I mailed that man his marriage vows printed out that we'd used in the wedding with orange highlighter of everything he was violating. I said, "This is what you're doing. This is what you're doing, Dow." So now, this is their testimony of grace.
We were married 2 years ago, almost February. Mm-hmm. And it was a second marriage for both of us. And the world just crept up on me. And I just got rebellious. And God had sent me so many gifts with this church and with Marcy. Mm-hmm. And the family that he was going to make with our two broken families. And I started to rebel, and I was a prodigal. I left. I decided we were going to get divorced. And I was a wretch, just a complete wretch. I was taking, and I see now, that I was just taking his gift that he had given us, a new start and forgiveness and a family and a woman who wanted to love me. Well, far from perfect, and I was far from perfect, but we were a family. We were a man and wife, and I had committed before God and before our family, before our friends, to love her like Christ loved the church. And here I was, openly and knowledgeable, with knowledge, rebelling. Mm-hmm. I knew it was wrong. He was convicting me. The Spirit was convicting me. And I went finally and talked to a friend, and he said, "Dow, there comes a time when you just have to have raw obedience, and the other things will come. God will honor that. He will be there." And the Lord showed grace to me through so many people, through this church, through Brad, through our small group, through people I didn't even really know, in amazing ways, and mostly ways that I needed that to hear, because I was out of there. People came to my home, people called, people didn't call, they left me to stew in my own juices, so to speak. This church was great. Brad, willing to meet with us. Brad and the elders getting in the car and driving an hour and a half to my home to find me. That's grace. Mm-hmm. Our small group praying for me, and all the people that Marcy had praying for me, that was grace. It was all grace. Then when I came back, that it was nothing but grace. Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing that I saw the most, and had never experienced it, was the way that God does work through the people that he puts in your life, and the examples of the grace that I saw in them, and Pastor Brad and the Hawtrees and everybody in the small group, and then the power, the absolute power of prayer, and seeing it over and over and over again answered in such big, magnificent ways, things that are just leave you in awe of grace.
And he forgave me. The gifts I threw back at him and then spit on and trampled in the dirt at his feet that he had lavished on me, when I was ready to come back, he spread out his arms and wrapped his cloak around me and kissed me and set me at a table and has grown Marcy, has grown me, and is blending a family and doing things that we didn't think could be done. And that was a year ago. And the miracle that he's worked from in our life, somebody like me, and putting two of us, very strong-willed, bullheaded people together after what we went through, is a miracle of grace. When we sit up there in the front, and worship,
it
is. Yeah. We are just trophies of grace.
Yeah.
That we are sitting here together.
Trust what God's word says, and he will honor that, and he will pour grace on again and again and again. He will get you to where he wants you, you know, not where we think that it should be. And I do just kind of, you know, I am in awe that we are sitting here today and the things that just even over the last 6 months, the way that he's grown us and
trophies of
grace.
And the reason I show you that is not that my name was mentioned, but did you hear how many people were involved? That's when it really starts to make a difference. And there was a culture by this time. I didn't have to instruct everybody. Small groups just crawling and reaching out. Other people, as they became aware of it. When you've got a bigger net that you're throwing out to hurting or rebellious people, it's much more effective than just the pastor trying to chase somebody down. Show your leaders how to do it. Show your leaders how to do it. I started taking our leadership meetings that sometimes can turn into nothing but arguing over the carpet and the copy machine and where we should buy it and when we should buy it. And I just started carving out a half hour of every leadership meeting. I called it what ifs. And I just said, let's do a what if. Because I wanted them to learn how to do ministry. And I would just make up little scenarios. Well, I didn't have to make them up. I'd just take the latest big problem, change the names of the guilty, and use it. So that they would know how to do these things. And I would set an egg timer and say, all right, here's the situation. Go. With your Bibles, take 5 minutes. Where would you begin? How would you give hope? What verses do you think you might use? And we would do that month after month. And here was a neat thing. They started bringing their Bibles to leadership meetings, right? That was a good thing. They started finding their way around their Bibles. And I just wanted leaders, whether you're a deacon or elder or whatever you are, to understand you're supposed to know how to do real ministry. You're supposed to know how to shepherd people and help people. If you want some of that, at my website, bradbigney.com, go to workshops, click that button, and then they'll drop down a menu of everything. This one's called Growing a Counseling Ministry. And if you click, you can get about a dozen what ifs. So they're there, ones that I used if you want to do something like that. And you can certainly make your own. Talk it up constantly. Talk it up constantly. Whatever you're excited about should be coming out of your mouth. So I was just talking about this kind of stuff all the time. Just talking about, do some messages on the mindset of equipping and training and giving away ministry. And if you can get yourself a phrase, I just used the phrase changing and growing, changing and growing. I know that doesn't sound like rocket science, but I just dropped it in there all the time that we're supposed to be changing and growing. And how are we changing and growing, changing and growing? And then I had a little pithy phrase that I just rode this pony into the sunset. I just said it all the time because our church is about training godly disciples who can handle life effectively by handling God's word effectively. Whether they believed it or not, I just kept saying it. Because we want to be a church who's training godly disciples who know how to handle life effectively by handling God's word effectively. And you just keep saying it, saying it, saying it. Make your own up if you want to. But I wanted there to be this mindset of, and I'm encouraged still today. One of the reasons I'm still there is not because of attendance, it's down. Is I still have people. We do a welcome dessert at my home and have new people who want to sign up just come and meet us and just chat it up. And the number one thing that I hear is, I've never changed this. I've never grown this much in a church. I've never grown this much. And then they'll say, you say really hard things, but we know you love us. And I've never grown this much in a church. I've never grown this much. Well, it's intentional, folks. I am not just wanting everyone to know all kinds of information about books of the Bible. I want to see people becoming disciples of Jesus Christ and living it out. Equip and expect your pastors and leaders to counsel, and you lead the way. Just have a mindset and a mentality. And again, so much that I'm saying, nobody likes it. So don't hear me saying, and they love this. No. So I just decided, anyone on our staff, I thought one day if I have staff, wouldn't that be cool? But when I do, they're going to do this. This is not going to be just the senior pastor. So my worship leader, he's Brad also, is certified ACBC. And when I was walking down the hall the other night with my big fat mess to use the bathroom, there he was in there with a couple sitting in front of him. He's counseling. Did he want to do that? Oh, no. But here's what he said to me. He said, this has changed how I think about Sunday morning worship as I pick out songs and put things together. I'm of the opinion every minister needs to be with real people at close range. It changes how you think as you prepare to do what you do. My children's minister director is certified and does counseling. my high school director, my junior high director, the only one I've given a pass on is the facility guy, and he may have to do it soon. I don't know. But right now, he's the only one I've said, okay, Lee, you don't have to. But also then, look at this, then it changes how we make decisions. My elders are not elders because they're a vice president at Citibank. All my elders lead a small group and do counseling. And then when we get ready to make a decision, that makes a huge difference. You don't have guys just sitting there that love to push paper around and make decisions. They are up against real people, and we have much more unity. I want the leaders to be shepherds before they make decisions. Oh, it changes the tone of your church. Put your money where your mouth is. And I know some of you may not have any money, but if you can, we didn't have a lot of money either. This is before we had a building. I just thought, oh my goodness, like I already touched on. I thought, I'm doing this big ask to get people to go with me. I'm giving conference money to go to Lafayette. I get my hotel paid for. I get some of my meals paid for. It doesn't cost me vacation time. I thought, all these people I'm trying to get to go, they're having to pony up money. So I went to the leaders. I think I was told no the first time. Just don't ever give up. You know, I'm kind of relentless and I'm praying. I said, give me some money. And I explained it this way. I said, if we really are saying we want to equip our people to do ministry, why don't we help them the way you help me? So let's give them some money. And finally, I got $5,000 to give some to couples, say, well, this won't pay for everything, but this will pay for your hotel, or this will pay for some meals. And then as we grew, I finally had like $20,000. We still have money. I was in a meeting just last week as we get ready for our conference where the small group pastor said, we're way over on scholarship money, but we didn't say, stop it. We said, well, we need to find some more money because our goal is to get people to come to this conference. So we give a huge scholarship to our small group leaders because we want them to do this. We'll help them. I announced to our whole church family, if you've never been to the fall training, counseling discipleship training, if you're new to our church and you've never been, there's this huge, marvelous scholarship for you if you're first time. Because I want, whether they ever become an official counselor on our list, the more people in our church that I get exposed to this, it changes the DNA of your church, how people are thinking. So put your money where your mouth is. Cry out to God to raise up a counseling ministry. I hope you've heard that, but I just feel like I can't say it enough. You guys, I can't tell you how many times I remember sitting on this bench overlooking the Ohio River at the Villa Madonna Nunnery. We had no building, right? I got five kids. I just tried to find quiet places to pray. And so the nuns permitted me to be on campus, and there's this bench that overlooked the river, and I would just sit there and pray, read my Bible and sing a hymn and cry out to God. And I'll never forget one day crying out to him saying, God, I can see Ohio, and I'm in Kentucky, I can see the tip of Indiana. I said, we need a counseling center in our area, biblical counseling. Folks, never in a million years did I think it was going to be us. I was just asking him to do it through some big church in our area. I've got 200 people meeting in a middle school. I just thought, God, do this for your name's sake. When I get to that page now, I cannot tell you how my heart soars. We are the free counseling center certified. I have 40 people counseling. I have 26 people certified. Just Ephesians 3:20. To him who's able to do exceedingly, abundantly, beyond all that you ask or think. But I'm telling you what I asked. I remember that day. Remember the prayer of Jabez was a hot little book. I don't necessarily agree with everything. It's not name it and claim it. But I decided to pray that for the glory of God. I said, God, to whatever degree you'd be pleased, expand the borders of our ministry. Use us for your glory, and then raise up some big church with a whole bunch of staff and money to be a counseling center, and we'll just help. But I remember praying that prayer. I went to the piece of property that we bought that we ponied up $225,000 it might have been $20 million, might as well have been. And I remember walking the property. I'd go for days of prayer. There were cows there pooping. I had to step around poop. And I'm walking the fence line for a day of prayer. And I'll just say, God, do something here for your glory. And I thought, we'll never have enough money to build a building. How will we ever have enough money to build a building? And now when I drive into the parking lot, sometimes I'll drive to the top of our parking lot. Some of the original fence is still there. And I'll just sit in my car.
say, God, I can't believe you've done this. Look at the building, and we have a counseling center.
And it's not, don't hear building, please. My heart is stirred by what I know is going on in there. It's just, I never went to a big church growing up. I'm not a huge big leader. I'm not Steve Byers. I'm very scared. I'm the kid that was wrapped around his mother's leg that wouldn't say hi. Say hi, Bradley. You know, this is like so far out of where I ever thought I would be in a million years. It's God. It's God. And so it gives me fervor to ask big things now, to still ask big things now. I've seen God work in answer to prayer and fasting. Cry out to God. Pray specifically, strategically, and relentlessly. I prayed specifically. I thought I was shooting for the moon. God, give us 5 certified counselors. We have 26. I just thought, I'm going to go big. I'm going to ask for 5. There's a page out of my prayer journal where I'd be praying every year, keeping track of how many people I'd gotten to go to Lafayette and how, what was going on. And so I track specifically. I ask specifically. I don't pray softball prayers. I don't just throw them up there. God bless us real good. What does that mean? He said, you have not because you ask not. And in Philippians 4, where he says, pray with petition and thanksgiving and intercession, ask. And please know, my hair is not swept back. My wife doesn't have long eyelashes. This is not name it and claim it kind of stuff. It's not blab it and grab it, you know, believe it and it'll happen. But we, as good evangelical Bible Christians, I think sometimes have thrown the baby out with the bathwater and have swung way too far towards what God is going to do, what God is going to do. There's still an element where he says, ask, cry out, ask. Mark 9 says, some things only come about by prayer and fasting. Have you ever fasted? Cry out. Cry out. Strike while the iron is hot. Here's what I started doing. When I would get my one or my three people to go to something, you don't want to wait till the whole next year and ask them if they'll go again. I would wait about 6 weeks and I would call it a reunion meeting. And I'd contact them and say, hey, let's all get together. Because everybody's excited, right? And let's just talk some more. And say, have you had a chance to use any of this? What has happened? Always someone had a story, more than one, of something they'd already done. And then I would try to take some good resource and give it away free. And I would, I would try to give them my favorite verses I use in counseling. I would give them worksheets. I want to give away my stuff so that they feel like they can do this. But every year I would say, all right, here's the book. First year I said, Instruments in the Redeemer's Hand. If you'll read it before next year's conference, it's free. Take it. But you have to read it before next year's conference. And the next year I took Jay Adams' What to Do on Thursday. I said, if you'll read it before next year's conference, you can take one tonight free. And then I did Ken Sandy's Peacemaker, and I just kept trying to push equipping and helping them to go do something with this. Yeah, there's some of the books that I was giving away. Take the plunge and get ACBC certified. Oh my goodness, I'd been doing this a long time, but I kept thinking I ought to do that, and the little packet was sitting on the corner of my desk, and just finally, we're about to move into our first building. Oh my goodness, you can imagine how busy you are with all that. And I thought, if not now, then when? Things are just going to get busy. I got to do this. And I just hunkered down and worked on it. I was so glad I did that. To have someone else who's been doing this a long time look over my shoulder and give me input on what's going on. That guy that's now our counseling pastor, Bob, he sat in with me in my den and saw me do counseling. Then he sat in with me after I was certified. And when the session ended and we all stand and the couple leaves, he says to me, oh, Brad, you have gotten so much better. And I just thought, how bad was it? But here was the thing for me, and you probably would sense this from my personality, what you've got already, and listen to me. I was just too much all over the place. And my supervisor just kept saying, not a shotgun, Brad. Rifle. Too much shotgun. I'd have 1,000 thoughts of great stuff I could do with them and say to them and give to them. And rifle. That was worth it, that alone. Take advantage of technology. There's stuff, even if you're isolated somewhere in a small church and say, I don't have anybody to watch. Lafayette Faith Baptist, Rob Green's church, has video series that you can get of counseling cases that you can watch. I just announced on a Sunday and said, once a month on Monday night, we're going to meet to look at some counseling cases, learn to how to help real people with real problems. I had 75 people show up. And we'd watch it, and then we'd have a Q&A just to stir it up and have people think, we're supposed to know how to do stuff like this. And I've already said, plug it into your regular teaching times. Like right there, we started doing a Sunday school class that will walk you through the NANC exam and help you answer the questions. Wherever you can plug this kind of stuff, don't lose heart and never give up. Don't lose heart and never give up. Therefore, since we have this ministry, as we've received mercy, we do not lose heart. But we've renounced the hidden things of shame, not walking in craftiness nor handling the word of God deceitfully, but by manifestation of the truth, commending ourselves to every man's conscience. Be ready and willing to spend yourself working hard. Oh, it's hard work. I feel exhausted, but very happy and satisfied. It will not be convenient. It will not be easy. It will not be without resistance, but so worth it.